53. Okay, said Nate. Despite my little freakout last weekend, we've learned a lot this week. I'm going to tell you my one new bit, and then I'm going to let Debbie tell you all the stuff she found. They were gathered in the lounge for the Saturday meeting. It was a smaller group. Clive was working at a theater in North Hollywood, but he'd heard most of it already, and Andrew was at a prayer meeting. Mandy didn't want anything to do with them after the building shook. Tim had gotten her to promise she wouldn't turn them into Oscar. They dragged the couches into a rough circle. More of a triangle, really, thought Nate. He leaned on the arm of one couch where Veek sat with Debbie and Tim. She was next to Nate, but still a bit cool toward him. Mrs. Knight dominated her couch, her cane ready to strike. Roger and Zila sprawled together on another couch, and her laptop covered her lap. I finally heard back from Public Works the other day, Nate said. They're supposed to have all the building plans on file. The only things they don't keep are residences, which get tossed, and historical documents. Those go off to libraries or museums. The guy was pretty helpful. A bunch of stuff from the late 1800s had all been moved to the Getty a while back, and he'd assumed the Cavatch plans, if they still existed, would have gone with it.
And now they're missing from the Getty?
Guessed Mrs. Knight. He shook his head. No, they never went. He checked, and it turns out the Cavatch plans are still considered active material and are still on file at Public Works.
Fantastic, said Zila. So we can go see them.
Nate shook his head. Nope. That's where it ends. They're sealed records. Tim's eyebrows went up.
Sealed?
Yep. The same way they seal plans for things like the federal building or parts of the state capitol or embassies. The guy emailed me to explain why he couldn't tell me anything. He even said he has to make a note in the file that I asked about them because of some Patriot Act thing.
The Patriot Act, coughed Veek.
Nate nodded. Tim set his jaw.
So this isn't just something that happened 120 years ago, he said.
Nate nodded again. It might just be bureaucracy, but yeah, I think somebody's still trying to keep this place a secret.
So what's that all mean? Asked Roger. Are we terrorists now or something?
Tim shook his head.
Persons of interest at best.
What's that get us?
50 years at Guantanamo Bay, scoffed Veek.
Well, hang on, said Nate. Debbie's got the really big stuff. He slid off the arm and onto the couch. Veek shuffled down and Debbie stood up. She held a thin deck of index cards that she massaged with the other hand. They were bright white, but halfway through she'd marked the edges with black magic marker. She'd gone over most of them with Nate the night before. Debbie smiled nervously and then slipped a pair of reading glasses from her pocket. She skimmed the first few cards and then smiled again.
Okay, said Debbie. Everyone ready for History 101?
Would have brought an apple if I'd known teacher was going to be hot, grinned Roger.
Zila reached over the laptop to whack him in the arm. Debbie blushed and massaged her cards again.
I spent the past 3 days at the school library looking for Alexander Kotorovich.
I could have done that, said Veek.
She shot a glance at Nate.
How long could a few web searches take?
I didn't use the web, though, said Debbie. There's still a lot of older stuff that hasn't made it to the internet, so we figured it might be better to go old school. I checked card catalogs, encyclopedias, and some newspapers and magazines on microfiche.
Stop keeping us in suspense, dear, said Mrs. Knight. What did you find?
Sorry, Debbie said. I'm not good with public speaking.
It's just us, said Tim. We're not grading you.
He gave a pointed look at the others. Even Mrs. Knight shifted on her couch. Debbie glanced at her cards.
Okay, she said. Alexander Kotorovich was a Serbian biochemist and neurophysiologist before people used those words. He also did a lot of research into evolution and wrote a few papers on Neanderthal man. He was the Walter Bishop of his time, and most of his ideas got him labeled as a quack.
She gave a little smile as she flipped an index card to the back of the pile.
To be honest, half his ideas would still get him labeled as a quack. This makes it tough to find a lot of solid material on him because so much of his work got discounted as irrelevant. Most of it just ends up buried in pseudoscience books. Pretty much the only place you can find him is lumped in with guys like Edgar Cayce or Immanuel Velikovsky. He believed in telepathy, shared dreaming, race memories, all that kind of stuff. The idea that people's minds can all connect on some extrasensory level.
So he was a nut, said Tim.
Maybe.
She flipped over another card.
At the time, people thought this was real science. H.G. Wells wrote a huge book, The Science of Life, and there's a whole section about telepathy in it. He even mentions Kotorovich in passing. Now, this is all a bit sketchy, Debbie said. She looked up from the cards and gave an apologetic frown. I had to piece stuff together from a few different sources, and they didn't all agree. I didn't have time to cross-check all of it, so I don't know how much of this is accurate.
Don't worry about it, said Zila.
Okay. So, Kotorovich studied the structure of the brain and how much bioelectricity it put out and what frequencies that electricity was on. He moved to London, and in 1877 he attended a lecture given by a mathematician named William Clifford, who was one of the first people to propose the idea of other dimensions. He noticed—
Wait, said Tim. Other dimensions? She nodded.
I looked him up. Clifford did a lot of work with concepts like curved space and there being more to the world than just the standard three dimensions. At least a fourth, mathematically speaking, and probably a fifth, sixth, seventh, and so on.
Tim raised an eyebrow but said nothing else.
She glanced at her cards to find her place.
So, Kotorovich noticed a lot of similarities between Clifford's math involving higher dimensions and his own calculations about telepathy. There were places where the numbers lined up and he decided there might be a connection.
I remember something like that in an astronomy course I took in college, said Nate. There was one class where the professor showed us how geometry and trigonometry tie directly to relativity. It really blew me away. Debbie nodded.
Right, same idea. So this became the focus of Kotorovich's research for the next 10 years. He didn't write much, but he did note that he'd gotten confirmation of the telepathic vibrations from a friend. He tried to present his work to the University College Board in 1887 and got kicked out. It was another year before he published anything else, and even then, it was more of this fringe science stuff that's gotten twisted and become unreliable.
Just a moment, said Mrs. Knight. First you were saying all of this was considered acceptable science. Now you're saying they called him a nut because of it.
It's because of where he was going with it, said Debbie. It's like people today who try to use math to prove the moon landings were faked or aliens built the pyramids. He was an embarrassment to the university, so they got rid of him.
So what got him fired?
Debbie tapped her cards.
He thought the world was going to end.
No way, said Zila.
Yep. He claimed there was a kind of psychic critical mass, and when it was reached, that was it.
Vic tilted her head.
Critical mass?
Debbie nodded again and shuffled another card to the back.
Okay, remember how Kotorovich was studying telepathy and got obsessed with dimensional mathematics?
She waited for enough of them to nod.
Okay, so he was convinced that once there were enough people in the world, when the population passed a key point, their combined brainwaves would sync up and achieve a sort of harmonic frequency that would break down certain dimensional barriers, like how a tuning fork can break glass.
Let me guess, said Tim. He glanced at Nate. Would that population be somewhere around 1.5 billion?
1.52, according to the article I found,
said Debbie.
But I think we've got the refined number.
Vic looked at Nate.
Why didn't you tell me all this?
I tried last night, he said. You weren't talking to me, remember? She smacked his arm.
Roger frowned.
So this was going to destroy the world, the tuning fork thing?
Debbie shook her head.
Nope, she said. What was in the other dimension would.
Nate blinked.
What?
I have no idea where this next bit comes from, said Debbie. This is just how all the stories and articles I found go, and it's almost definitely what made University College get rid of him. Kotorovich somehow came up with the idea there were some kind of creatures, big, smart, scary alpha predators, living in these higher dimensions. Telepathically sensitive people sensed them all through history, and that's where all our myths about demons and monsters come from. It's their presence leaking through. When the dimensional barriers were shattered, according to him, these things would come through and eat everything they could until the barriers reasserted themselves. Kind of the universe's method of population control.
Nate glanced at the sky through the lounge's big windows.
Creepy, said Vic. It gets creepier.
It sounds silly to me, said Mrs. Knight.
You didn't tell me any of this the other night, Nate said to Debbie.
I just gave you the highlights, she said. Sorry.
Sucks to be left out, doesn't it? Said Veek.
She smacked Nate in the arm again, but it wasn't as hard this time.
So, what were these things supposed to be? Asked Tim.
I don't know, said Debbie with a tiny shrug. He falls back on a lot of the fancy descriptions they used back then that say a lot without saying anything. Again, he doesn't even explain how he figured this part out. He just says they're really big and really nasty.
I'd have fired his ass too, said Roger. And it still doesn't tell us what all this shit is.
He waved his arms around at the building.
Seems pretty straightforward to me, Nate said.
He predicted the end of the world. Then he built this place to stop it.